Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
This podcast is brought to you by AcapiMatch. AcapiMatch is a boutique matchmaking service that helps exceptional singles find meaningful connections and relationships. To learn more about our matchmaking services, online dating makeovers and takeovers, or to enroll in an upcoming group coaching intensive, go to AcapiMatch.com. Welcome to Ask a Matchmaker. I'm your host, Matchmaker Maria. For over a decade, I have combined four generations of family matchmaking tradition with modern relationship psychology, behavioral science, and dating trends. With this unique expertise, each week I bring a guest on to talk about dating and relationships while answering your questions. You can ask a question by visiting askamatchmaker.com. We've reached the end of our first season, and thank you so much for being a loyal listener and telling your friends about Ask a Matchmaker. It's been so much fun, and I'm so excited for season two, which starts on September 8th. We'll have some new and exciting changes that I just know you're going to love. And if you don't know what those changes are, go a couple episodes back. There is a season two teaser episode. In the meantime, we're revisiting some of my favorite interviews from the last year. You might have heard it before, but the beauty of listening to something again is you get to notice something you might not have before. It's always good to get a refresher on some of these important topics. In this week's episode, we are revisiting that episode on long-distance relationships with Maria's husband, George. It's so interesting to talk like that in the third person, but yes, this episode is about me and my husband and our long-distance relationship. Now that so many of us are returning home from vacation, I know I'm about to get inundated with long-distance relationship questions, and George and I talk about how we made it work. And let me tell you, it was the hardest thing ever. So if you're thinking about it, do it. But you should know it's going to be super tough. And this episode is for you. And if you're not the person thinking about being in a long distance relationship, you can learn a lot from this. How to date your partner when you're apart or even when you're together. How to find yourselves again, you know. And you can always forward it to a friend who's going through this too. Next week, we come back with season two, but until then, enjoy today's rebroadcast. Okay, so I constantly get questions about long distance. Every single Wednesday, oh, I'm dating someone here, will it work? Or what are your best tips for long distance? I feel like I've posted this several times as well in my feed. And, you know, the truth is, if there was an award, I am first place at long distance. Actually, no, let me do it better. I am the queen of long distance. And if I'm the queen of long distance, my husband George is the king. So naturally, if I'm going to talk about how I made my long distance relationship work, I'm going to talk to the other half that also made it possible. This week's guest is Georgios Pyriotakis.
Hi, it's good to be back.
Today's topic, long distance. This kind of wasn't planning on doing this episode. I was planning on it, but I did an Instagram live last week, just randomly. I was having a good hair day, I suppose. And I started getting long distance relationship questions again. And I was like, I should talk to George. Because we got married, it was hard.
Yeah, it was part of the life that I kind of want to like block a little bit. But also, you know, it wasn't right now in retrospect, you know, I think only of the good moments. So I'm glad we had that. But back then it was not as joyful as it seems now.
Okay, so let's start from the beginning. So you knew Maria's boss. So yeah, the person introduced us. One of my employees, her name was Maria. She was another matchmaker on the staff. At the time, I think she was our community manager. I was heading up to Boston. Did you? I think you knew you were meeting me.
Yeah, Maria did tell me that her boss is coming up and she's planning to go out on Friday night, December 14, going to 15. Mm-hmm. And she invited me along with some other people. And because she's a really good friend and I want to make her look good in front of her boss, I definitely said yes. I will definitely come to that night out.
But you almost canceled.
Yeah, it was a long and rough day. So I'm like, maybe I should stay home. But then I'm like,
It was a long day. It was a really rough day just generally. So that was the day we met was the day of the Sandy Hook shootings.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think all of us, like we were, you know, I remember we were at Maria's house, Maria and Banos' house, and we're watching the news, horrified. We were crying. And, you know, what was interesting was like, you know, Maria and Bano, they're from Greece, just like you, but they had lived in the United States for a few,
maybe
couple
two,
years,
3 years. Yeah.
Like maybe 2-3 years. Whereas you had been in the States, you know, since 2001. And you've been through a few school shootings since 2001. Yeah. Whereas for them, it was, I think seeing it from their eyes too was, you know, it's like, how do you explain this to anyone, let alone to people who don't experience this in their own country? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember Panos asking like, you know, why don't they just take away the guns? And I'm like, oh, you'd think, you know, it was just very interesting. And then, you know, we had all made those plans to go out, right? I took a train to Boston.
Yeah, and you're almost feeling guilty going out, you know, that day.
Yeah. But you know what I remember? I remember how packed all the bars were. And I think it was because everyone just needed a drink following that. And
probably.
So, but but you also almost, I think I remember you telling me you almost left too, because naturally Marie and Panos were running late.
Yeah. Well, it was like at least an hour late. And I was waiting outside because, you know, you had to have the full party to get in. So I was waiting outside. I'm like, I'm going to go. I don't think they're coming. And that's when you guys pulled over in the cab. Yeah.
Let's give a shout out to where we met.
Lolita Tequila Bar in Boston. If you ever visit Boston, you should definitely go there. This is a really interesting place. Has the largest selection of tequila that I have seen, and really good food as well. And it's a very interesting place too. It's like a basement, and it's like red and black, like a little bit gothic in there. It's a very interesting place to be in, and really good drinks and really good food.
I remember seeing you outside and you looked kind of sad. Kind of weird. I don't know.
I was tired and upset that you guys were late.
Yeah. I know you weren't upset at me, but then, you know, we immediately started talking and it was like, I guess I was kind of happy that you were, I mean, I didn't know that you would end up being my boyfriend, let alone my husband and father and my kids. But I remember just kind of being happy that you were like being nice to me. I know that sounds kind of weird. Okay. But sometimes like when you meet new people, I've noticed this like at networking events, sometimes people put like this front. Like, don't you know who I am, or I'm more important than to you, or whatever. And I know that this was a meeting among friends, but people still kind of do that sometimes.
Yeah.
And you were just, you know, you were genuinely asking me questions. And of course you would tell me, I don't know if you were lying, but I remember you saying to me, like, you were trying to give a really good impression to your friend. Like you were trying to give a great first impression for your friend's sake because she was employed by me.
Yeah, and she had just started, I think. It was like the first time you were coming up to see her in Boston. So it was, you know, I was trying to make her look good, that she has very interesting friends. I wasn't really trying. It was very natural, to be honest. Or maybe trying a little bit.
Did you think I was cute?
Yeah, I think I'm still thankful that the moment that the cab pulled out and I saw you in the back seat, that image is still engraved in my head.
Are you serious?
I remember the type of the cab and how it looked like, and you sitting in the back with your hair in a ponytail next to Maria. So I remember that image. Yeah,
I'm smiling. Like no one can hear it. I mean, no one can see it. I know you can see it, but no one else can see it. But I'm like smiling from ear to ear right now. I remember. I think you're wearing like a. Were you wearing like a 3-piece suit, or is that my imagination?
No, I had a shirt, pants, but I do have like a peacoat on top that looks like a 3-piece suit.
Okay. I thought you were wearing like a vest or something.
Ah, maybe. That was the time I was going through like the vest.
The vest phase, yeah.
Phase, yeah. And a hat.
And the hat, yeah. I remember heading downstairs and I remember you're going with Bano to get drinks. Bano's our mutual friend as well. He's married to Maria. At the time they were dating, and it's like weird, like we started talking, we were kind of vibing, and then you went to get drinks, and I remember you coming back and you just had a drink for yourself, and Banos was juggling my drink, his drink, and Maria's drink. And I'm thinking, like, come on, man. Like, you know, I don't know. I don't know what I was, I don't know why I was putting expectations on you because I just met you. But I remember that part. And also, I'm a little bit,
you know, not as fast in social cues and things like that. So that sounds totally like me, like not meeting the social expectations at the first time, at the first try.
Right. That's true. But you do well. And then, what else do you remember? I remember a few things about that night.
Yeah.
Like I remember talking to you and like getting along with you. And then I remember you went to the bathroom and Maria comes up to me and she's like, what do you think of George? What do you think of Yorgo? And I'm like, I really like him. Like, I think he's really nice. And she goes, great. He just joined our database today. I had him sign up. I just want you to meet him so we can start setting him up. You know, he's my friend, but he's an academic. You know, he can't afford us. Maybe we could, you know, set him up for free. And I was like, oh, can you go and delete his profile? Because that will be really unethical for me to like know that. I'd like to shoot my shot first. Yeah. And she's like, wait, what? And I was like, I kind of like him. Like, this is like, I don't know, about an hour into meeting you. And what is it, 90 minutes maybe?
Yeah, the one memory I have from that night, we're talking a lot. And at some point, I mentioned that this place, Lolita, has really good drinks. Judging from the martini I was having, and you said, oh yeah, but recently I've been to whiskey. I tried some really good whiskeys, which was like, oh, that's amazing. Whiskey girl, that's it. Well, since then, you haven't had any whiskey.
That's true.
You did mention it, but that was it.
Well, I wasn't lying. I know you use it against me at least like once a month, but how I trapped you with a whiskey line. But it's true. At that time, I was going to different whiskey bars in the city and trying different things. I liked it. You know, I don't know. After I met you, I just kind of stopped. You know, look, to my defense, you're really good at mixology. You started making some amazing drinks. And I don't know if you remember this, but I was like, oh no, make me this drink. I didn't want whiskey. I wanted, you know, the Pink Penguin.
I know, but I'm also kidding now. It's okay that you haven't had whiskey with me.
Yeah, first of all, I haven't had any alcohol in like a couple of years now.
Yeah,
you know,
more
by choice. Not no one's like, you know, no, there's no like reason. I don't know. I don't feel good when I drink. Mm-hmm. You though have alcohol like every day.
Not every day, but every other day I might have like a glass of whiskey or, you know, like a small drink
right before bed. Yeah. So you knew that I was coming up from New York though.
Yes, I didn't know that. Yeah.
And okay, you know, you and I saw each other the next day. Mm-hmm. We went to, we walked the Boston Trail, which I think, by the way, was such a great, it was a date idea, but it wasn't a date because we were with all of our friends.
Yeah, it was in a very friendly kind of wavelength.
Yeah, we spent like 8 hours together.
Yeah. We started in the morning, we went for breakfast, and then we started walking around. And I remember during our walk, you started talking about Friends and the different episodes of Friends. And then, you know, you are a big nerd when it comes to Friends. And I'm also a very big nerd. So that was like a really good connection there. Like I remember at least a quarter of that walk, we're talking about Friends episodes and quoting lines from Friends.
We don't do that anymore. Now it's like all The Office, Parks and Rec, maybe a little bit of Arrested Development, and John Mulaney.
Yeah, definitely John Mulaney.
Do you feel like at any point that weekend, so that night, would you take me out that night or was it the next night?
No,
was
that night. We went to the Hawthorne? Saturday. Yeah.
Yeah. So we went out to the Hawthorne that night.
Mm-hmm. Another really good cocktail bar in Boston, by the way.
Yeah.
Right by the Fenway Park.
Right. And I remember there, I don't know for you, but I remember at Hawthorne. So I've spent the whole day with you now. We went to our respective home. Like you went to your home and I went to Maria's house to get ready. And then you came and got me with an Uber to take me to a cocktail bar.
Mm-hmm.
Which now, only now do I appreciate what you did. You took an Uber from Fenway to go to Maria's house, which was the opposite direction.
Mm-hmm.
To go back to Fenway. Back. Yeah. Oh, you really liked me.
Yeah. At the time, my house was probably like 5 minutes walking from Hawthorne. It was really close.
So I remember when we were at Hawthorne, I remember you were talking about something and I remember I was laughing and I remember thinking like, oh yeah, this is the guy. I didn't know if I was going to be right or anything, but I just knew it was like different.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking, okay, we'll make it work. Like Boston, New York. It wasn't even... It's like, it's funny to me because if I knew what I knew now, like, I don't know if I knew then what I know now, and I'm not talking about our marriage and children. I'm talking about like, oh, you know, Maria, you're not, you don't, you think you're signing up for maybe 1 year maximum of long distance, but it would be 6 years of long distance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was.
This is why you and I are the queen and king of long distance.
Yeah. Long, both in terms of time and distance.
Yeah.
Long square.
Was there at any point that weekend where, you know, I don't know, you thought, oh, Maria lives in New York. Could this be anything?
Not really. I think that I thought that, you know, she lives away, but, you know, we can give it a shot. In my head, I was thinking, oh, New York is just 2 hours away. It's not that bad. I mean, I had no idea about geography back then, like distances. So, but, you know, that's what I, even with friends now that they ask me about that, I tell them, you know, it's, if you think it's worth a shot, worth a shot. Like, don't think about the distance. Think about the people, the person.
And it wasn't 2 hours. It was like 4.5 hours.
It's 4.5 hours, yeah. If you take the bus, maybe 7 too.
I want to talk later about how we parted that weekend. I'll talk about that at the end. We'll leave that. It's like, that's a fun mm-hmm. story. But then you, when you know, I got back to New York, I was so smitten with you. I don't know if I've ever told you this, but I still had a second date with someone that week.
Yeah, I think you told me that, yeah.
I had gone on a first date the week before, and I had a second date that Wednesday. So I was back home, I guess, on Sunday or Monday. And obviously, we spent the next 2 days just texting each other.
And
you know,
FaceTime and Skype.
FaceTiming and Skype. And then I was like, oh, I can't cancel on this date. Like, I just, you know, I like that person I went on the first date with. I did not like them as much as you because I didn't even think about them. I had to get a calendar reminder to tell me, oh, I have a second date coming up. And I remember going on the date and just, I'm so grateful I had another date because it only just affirmed for me, like, oh, I really like George is different. Like I need to, this is great. Like he's great. Like, and the person I was with, they're a great person. I really admire them. You know, they're just not, they, you know, we have very similar values. We're not compatible. Like, I felt a lot more myself and more fun with you. And I was, and I'm talking about like the first few days of getting to know you with this person as well, like kind of having that comparison mm-hmm. and thinking like, okay. And then I remember coming home from that date thinking, okay, well, let's focus all on George. And I remember just being that Wednesday night, just like all in with you. And then at the same time as this is happening, you're flying to Greece.
Yeah. Actually, if I remember, I was supposed to fly actually on Monday. Mm-hmm. So I met you on Friday. We said goodbye on Sunday. And then Monday I was supposed to fly. And around 5 o'clock that afternoon or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I got the email that my flight has been canceled. And normally you'll be very upset. But inside me, I'm like, yes, that's what I want. So I spend some more time Skyping because, you know, I will be going to Greece. And it's also, you know, time difference, so it won't be as easy. So I'm like, okay, I get a couple
lingering
more days.
Lingering parents,
yeah. The relatives, people want to see you. You don't get a lot of free time.
You spent a lot of time Skyping me that weekend. Yeah. And now the distance was even longer. So yeah, I remember you came back, I think, what was it, January 4th? And then the next day you were back, you were in New York to see me. Mm-hmm. And that's when you discovered how far New York is from Boston.
Yeah.
But you were already in love with me.
Yeah, I was already in love. And, you know, it's also, even then, I didn't realize it because I knew that I was going to be coming from Greece. I would have jet lag. So I took the first bus out from Boston, like at 6 a.m. So it was, the streets were empty. It was 3.5 hours. I'm like, I can do this. That's easy. No problem. It was the only time that it was so short drive from Boston to New York in the next 6 years.
And that was it. Then. That was Team Penguin. That's what we call mm-hmm. our couple. That was our hashtag at our wedding, but that's where Team Penguin begins. And obviously, you know, we always think about the good things now, but there were a lot of bumps in the road of like how, you know, we made the long distance work. And I think I have my own reasons as to like how I think it worked. I'm sure you have your own ways that mm-hmm. you think it worked. But before I ask that, I'd love to ask, you know, did you have any long distance relationships before you met me?
Well, in theory, I did and I didn't. Like, so I didn't. I was dating a woman in Greece when I left in 2001. And in theory, we did have long-term relationship, long-distance relationship, but it was very weird because I had just gotten here, didn't have a cell phone, I didn't have even a landline. We would speak like once a week until I figured how to live in the United States. So it didn't really last.
Okay.
And that was it pretty much.
No, you told me about some other women. Hold up.
Oh, yeah. You remember.
And you then don't? Another one.
Yeah, I totally forgot about it. Another one was also from New Jersey when I was in Florida. And she happened to be the cousin of a friend. And, you know, she came to visit Florida. And then we hit it off. And we did have a long distance relationship. Yeah.
Yeah. So for our listeners, George lived in Gainesville
for nearly 10 years.
Nearly 10 years. If you're wondering if he's a Gator, yes, he is.
Yes.
And then you went back to Greece for a year. And then you came back for your army mm-hmm. duties.
Yeah, I did go back to Greece in
2010
for a military service. It's compulsory in Greece. And then immediately I started looking for opportunities to come back to the United States. And then I went like in March of 2010 back in Greece. And then I came back to the United States in August of 2011.
And you started working at Harvard.
Yeah. And that's where you met me the next year.
Yeah, I met you in 2012. Mm-hmm. And I remember you apparently were telling Maria that you were so upset, like you didn't like it there, like not at Harvard, but at Boston, that you were thinking about like going somewhere else. Or was that my imagination?
Yeah, I didn't like Boston that much. It was, I didn't have a big circle of friends. Like when I was in Florida, I had a really nice circle of friends with a lot of people, but it's a very transit city too. So by the time I left, most of my friends had left. So it was a good opportunity for me to change. So I went back to Greece. I came to Boston this time. It was really great. But I felt that in Boston, I didn't have the energy and the time to make new friends and meet new people. So outside my immediate work circle, I didn't really know that many people in Boston. So I will hang out with my work friends and that's it pretty much. So it was kind of boring. Plus in Boston, it gets dark really early because it's a lot more north. So it was very upsetting. My apartment was also kind of a garden apartment, which is lingo for basement apartment with a window. And that makes things even darker. So I did really hate it, that lifestyle.
You were a hermit when I met you.
Yeah, pretty much.
So I had a few long distance relationships before I met you, but I met them, you know, in New York, and I got to experience those relationships for like 3 to 6 months before somebody moved away. And I don't think the distance is what broke us up. I think the distance is what cleared things up with like, oh, this person's a sociopath. You're not happy. And now that you have that opportunity to be away from them, I felt like I could see more clearly. Like I wasn't distracted by the day-to-day fights and making mm-hmm. up. I was able to just like, it was like, as if someone gave me a magnifying glass now, like from a distance to be like, oh, you're actually really unhappy here. And now that you don't have them every day in your life, you can, you know, make better decisions for your own mental health. And I thought that was really helpful for me to like be away. And with you, it was the opposite. I had never dated someone that I had met in a different city and then just immediately long distance. And I remember like that following summer in 2013, we were at like one of our friends' engagement parties. And, you know, I knew you were all in with me too. At least that's how you made it seem with like certain actions. And thinking, okay, you know, George's gonna start connecting with people down here and he'll move. Like, you know, it was really hard for me to move my business at the time.
Yeah. And that was the plan, that I would be coming down here, because I was also in a position that was very transient position to start with. You know, it wasn't a permanent position or something that at least at the time I thought it's not gonna be in long term.
So now that we've said that, what do you think made it work?
I think the number one thing is commitment from both of us. And
that's a good one.
And it's basically, you know, from the beginning, we both knew what we're getting into. Okay, I had some issues with time and distances and things like that, but still it's a long distance. And since from the beginning we started like that, I think it's a sign that we had both the will to put the time and the effort to do it. And this commitment is actually one of the fundamental reasons that made it work, number one. And number two, I think it was you, because, you know, from your work experience, you know about relationships and how to maintain and keep them and make them grow. So you always were putting this effort, extra effort into that. So if it was someone else that would put the commitment, both of us, I'm not sure if it would have worked the same way.
I did not expect you to say that. And thank you. I really appreciate that. I think there was another thing else that existed that was because of me. And that was because I was more capable to come up longer. So like, you know, I remember joking with one of my roommates, you know, one of my roommates, she saw her boyfriend live like 7 blocks away, I think. And they saw each other maybe 10 nights a month. And I saw you 10 nights a month, even though we lived, or 14 nights a month, even though you lived in a different city. So what we would do is you would come down, let's say Friday to Sunday to New York. And again, you're coming at Friday at midnight, I remember.
Most of the time, yeah.
Yeah. And then Sunday you would leave with, I think, what was it, the 7 p.m.?
Yeah, the last bus was 7 p.m.
You'd get home really late too. So we'd have the weekend. And then the following Friday, I would come up to Boston, but not for 3 days. It would be for 10 days. So I'd come up from that Friday to the following Sunday, and then I would go back. So I'd be away from the office for a week. So basically what I would do is I would schedule my clients all the other days except for this 1 week a month. So that way I knew I would spend 10 days up there with you, and then you would come down the weekend before and the weekend after, something like that. So it would come out to essentially 16 nights a month we were spending it together.
Especially the first 2 years, I think that was.
Oh yeah, the moment you put the moment you put a ring on my finger, I stopped coming to Boston. I was like, "Fuck that shit."
Even a year before that, I think.
You think so? Yeah. No, I was. How many times? I mean, I saw. I don't want to give away like where you live, but like you know, when you were in Cambridge, I was there all the time. That was before we got engaged.
Before we got engaged. Yeah.
I just know that at some point I just stopped coming up. That was by choice, though. That was not like I was punishing or anything. I think it was because we were bored in Cambridge. We were bored.
Yeah, that's
like,
what I was about to say.
Yeah, if you're over 30.
I mean, Cambridge is just like a really nice city with a lot of bars and cool places that you can go drink. That's all it is. There's nothing else to do there. There are almost no place with live music. There's no museums, no parks, no things that you can walk around. It's a very boring city. It's a student city.
And like after 2 years of being there, you know, all those other weekends or weeks, we had done most of the things, you know, we even did that duck tour on the, on the river or, you know, and the, so yeah, it was just, I don't know. I think you were consciously coming down to New York because it was more fun to come down to New York because there was just more things to do.
Yeah. Way more things to do. Yeah.
And any other reasons why you think it worked out? Any tips?
I think that every time that we actually were together, especially when I was coming down to New York, we spent our time really productively in a way. Like we do like a lot of fun activities, a lot of things to do. So every minute, we're both aware that every minute counts. And we did spend every minute the best way we could do that. So especially when I was coming down to New York, we'll go to museums, we'll go to a nice restaurant. Walk the High Line Park, we'll explore a new neighborhood. So it was always very packed and very interesting, very fun. It's something that you're looking forward to go.
Wow, we don't do anything anymore. You just said all these things. I mean, it feels like a pandemic, but also like kids.
Yeah.
I'll tell you my tips, but I will say like I never at any point did I expect for us to get engaged long distance, get married long distance. Mm-hmm. Like I remember coming back from my honeymoon alone and you went to Boston. I was in New York and somehow we conceived a child. I was pregnant and you know, half of that I was pregnant alone. And that was tough, especially on like my bad days. I remember like one day I had a really bad day. I think you remember and luckily you were here when the allergy happened, but there was this other day that was like, I think like a week before that was really emotional for me. Like work-wise, and I was just having a bad day. And I remember just really crying and walking home. And, you know, I can't even imagine like what you thought. And, or even, you know, when I was 9 months pregnant, I got into this, I've never really talked about this publicly ever, but like I got into a really bad car accident and they had to use the jaws of life to get me out of the car that I was driving. This big municipal truck had hit my side, you know, they were on the phone or whatever. Luckily I was fine. Nothing happened to me, but you know, I can't even imagine what that phone call must have been like for you.
Yeah, that's what I'm about to say. Like, Hersula, your sister, sent me a text message. It's like, We're in a car accident, and now the jaws, the fire department is here, and they use the jaws of life, try to cut the door to free Maria. I'm like, what happened? I had no idea. Thank God you were okay.
She didn't
you
call
were okay.
You.
No, and then I called her, and she was like crying on the phone when she was trying to explain what happened. That made things even worse. So I had no idea what was going on. You were okay, though. Thank God you
I
were
was
okay.
I was okay. Yeah, it was like this accident happened at 5 miles per hour. So
and the only thing they had to use the jaws of life was that the door was kind of damaged; it wouldn't open.
No, so, it was his tire, because it was one of those big ass Mack trucks. Mm-hmm. It was like stuck in the door, so they had to find a way to get him off the door. And I think the worst part is because I was 9 months pregnant; they were scared of they're scared of the stress of the baby and all that stuff.
Of
and it
course,
was already
a
pretty shitty pregnancy. Again, half of it alone. And then we had a kid. And I think we both thought that, oh, now with a kid, your job would be more, they said, stay an extra year. And so we believed them. We made a lot of decisions
mm-hmm.
based on certain things that were said by your employer.
Yeah.
And one of those things was that, we'll be flexible. Don't worry. You can come down on Thursdays to New York and come back up, to Boston on Monday mm-hmm. or whatever. And that once we had the baby, that was no longer the case. That was.
Yeah. It happened.
And
very
that's
rarely.
When the fighting happened. Like, we didn't really fight as much, like as a couple, like mm-hmm. every couple fights. Right. And we had our own fights and disagreements, but like, that last year of long distance, the sixth year.
Mm-hmm. That was really rough. Yeah.
That was rough. 2018 was rough.
Mm-hmm. Both in terms of, that we're long distance, we had a kid that I would get to see only the weekends. You have to raise him essentially, by yourself every day of the week. But also financially, it was coming very, we're putting a lot of strains because, we had rents in two cities. Amtrak tickets up and down or bus tickets up and down, and especially after we moved to New Jersey, it was pretty much only Amtrak, so it was getting a lot of there's a lot of issues that was happening there, so it was pretty rough.
I feel like what would upset me the most is you would tell me that okay this week I'll be coming home on Thursday or Wednesday, and then if it was Wednesday I'd be so happy, right? But that never mm-hmm. happened. And then you'd say, okay, I'm coming on Thursday. And I'm like, okay. And you kind of mentally prepare for Thursday, like at least, me. And now that you've been full time with our second child, now you know exactly how mm-hmm. exhausting it is every single day. And I just remember when you would call on the Thursdays and say, my boss won't let me come down today. I have to stay till tomorrow, whatever. I just remember screaming, crying, cursing. I was really mean to you and you took it.
I mean, yeah, because you are under a lot of emotional stress though. It's postpartum and a crying baby who Yanis was, he's a really nice kid, but when he was a baby, he was throwing up a lot, pretty much like every other day. And that alone is enough to drive you crazy. So I understood completely how it was.
Yeah. It was
and
really
then
tough.
When we're like, I'll calm down, basically the weekend we'll be taking care of Yanni and you will get to catch some sleep. So it was also still a little bit not very easy.
And, I feel like our relationship suffered a lot from this too, because I know this is like, we're talking about long distance, but now we're talking about even like what it's like to be married in long distance, like, or having a kid long distance. Our sex life struggled.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I'm saying more than I think you bargained for today, but
it's okay.
I was so mad at you, and mm-hmm. I knew it wasn't your fault, but I was just mad at you because I had to be mad at someone.
Yeah, that's why there's always a husband to be mad at someone.
Well, no, that's not.
Just
I'm not
kidding.
Mad at you anymore, but like I was really mad at you, and then I also wanted to have sex with you, but I was also so exhausted, and then I think why I was angry with you is that. I'm the one that's up four nights a week
mm-hmm.
and you got to, sleep whenever you wanted to sleep. You got to wake up whenever you wanted to wake up. You didn't have to deal with what I was dealing with, basically mm-hmm. is what I'm saying. Right. And that was, I was just like, I guess I was really resentful and really angry. And I think that anger was just urging you more, like you need to find a job. You need to stop this.
Yeah.
And I think for you, I'm not going to put words in your mouth or whatever, but I felt like certain commitments were made to you that just weren't following through.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was part of the issue. And it's also exhausting for me also emotionally, mostly because mm-hmm. I don't get to see my son, you know, most of the week. I get to see him the weekends. And, you know, in the beginning was, I don't want to say it was okay, but it was less hurtful because it was, you know, he was a baby. He wouldn't, but I remember distinctly one time that I came back and I walked in the room and he saw me, he started laughing and be happy. And then I walked out to get my coat off and he started crying immediately. And that's when, you know, you understand, you know, how much you mean to that kid. And you know, that kind of brought it home for me. And the decision was that, you know, either I get a job or I just come down here and then I find a job. That was, you know, we didn't really have much to play around.
And then I felt like it just became really fast. Like all suddenly when mm-hmm. I think one of the problems, at least from my perspective, and you can totally disagree with me, is this entire time you thought you were going to stay in academia.
Yeah, that was the plan. That was what I was hoping for.
Right.
But that, you know, and that's one lesson that I learned. I talk sometimes to some junior people, junior to me, and they ask me about advice. First of all, I don't like to give advice. I just try to say my own personal experience. And, you know, it's always hard to balance career, family, work-life balance. It's a very tough thing
in
to
academia,
achieve.
In academia, you mean?
Generally. Oh. And, you know, you have to put your priorities. What's important for you? Is it important for you to have a family and have kids and raise your kids? Or is it important to you to become like an academic? Or if you're in the private sector, someone well-known in the private sector, a director or a CEO or something. You have to decide which one you want to pursue first. And once you decide that, the rest of it just falls in place. And it doesn't mean that if you decide to have family, you cannot be very successful in what you do. It just means that your actions will happen. All your choices will happen because you want the best for your family and not the best for your career. And then things become a lot more clear. And that's what a hard lesson I learned. And I'm thankful I did.
And now you're in industry. You left academia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm in the private sector. And it's actually very similar in terms of project and having fun and doing all the things that I like to do. Oh, and I get to be close to my family. Yeah.
And better pay.
Better pay too, yeah.
I'll never forget when you moved down. I remember thinking like, oh, now I get to live with George full time. I hope we like mm-hmm. each other. Because we yeah. fought so much.
Yeah, the last year we did
so play. Many months. Yeah, for the last year, like basically all of Yanni's like 10 months of living until, you know, because mm-hmm. he was 10 months when you came down.
Yeah.
And we fought so much for that. And it was never like, I remember you said this one thing that you said, I wonder what we'll fight about when I live down there.
Mm-hmm.
And you were right, because I think, you know, I think there was for me, the biggest hump was not only living with you full time, but trying to resuscitate our sex life. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want to be roommates with you. I want to be, you know, your partner, and I want to be passionate, and I want to
mm-hmm.
like love you in, you know, more ways than, you know, emotional. Like I want to be physical, and I know you did too, but that took time. That took like 6 months.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. But,
for you to
take,
like,
yeah.
for us to be like sexual beings again, not like I felt like at that time, and it's not you, it's also me, like, because I was so desperate for you to help me with Yanni, with our son. I only saw you as a dad.
Mm-hmm.
And similarly, because I'm taking care of your kid all week, you only saw me as a mom.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of a sudden it's dad and mom, and no longer that's my sexy wife.
Mm-hmm.
That's my hot husband. And it took like 6 months. Like, I think, so, you know, I say all this because this is a product of being in a long distance relationship for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel, you know, looking back now, you know, we've been living together full time since September 2018.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Up to that point, we have lived, the longest we've been together, living together, was like 2.5 weeks after our wedding and our honeymoon.
Yeah.
That was it. That was the longest we've lived together. Even the holidays, it was not as long. It was probably like a week and a half.
Right.
So it was.
Now we don't fight about that shit. We don't even really fight about a lot of things. Everything is kind of mm-hmm. settled. What do we fight about now?
Stupid stuff.
When we're just having bad days, and then we just apologize after 5 minutes.
Yeah.
think,
those are two different issues, though. Just to clarify, it's one is the long distance relationship and being together after having survived like a very long distance. And then the other thing is having a kid on top of it, because kids alone, even if you live with someone full time and, you know, you've been living together for several years, the moment you get kids, a kid, your life flips upside down, completely changes. You don't know what to do. You're always tired. You're always both of you exhausted. So, and we had this as every other couple who gets a kid. And then on top of that, we also have the long distance. And that's why that year, the adjustment period was so long.
I have tips to make it work. I hope that no one's in a long distance relationship as long as we were, because that was really rough.
I mean, yeah.
And what's funny is that our primary love languages between us is quality time too.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we were like a distance. So we had to find a different way to have quality time, which was over FaceTime. Well, in the beginning it was Skype, but then it became FaceTime.
And then they made all the
Pair app.
Back then it was called Couple. I still have it on my phone.
You do?
Yeah. It doesn't load anymore, but I have it because it's a good memento of that time.
Oh my God, I love you. You're so
It doesn't even open anymore. The good thing is that's what I said before, that because we're both quality time people, every time we were together, we did very interesting things. Like, you know, like you came out in Boston, for example, we went for the duck tour, right? We did the Freedom Trail. We'll try things to do. We'll find things to do. And of course, when you come to New York, it's like endless possibilities. You can do like many, many different things.
Yeah, I don't remember binge watching TV with you when I was with you.
No, never.
Except for like nighttime. You know, when we binge watched a lot of TV, when we got stuck at home after the Boston marathon bombing, we lived right by the finish line. And that was such a rough week for everyone, especially those families that unfortunately lost family. But, you know, we were under everyone. I feel like everyone was on house arrest. And that was just because that was when we were like, oh, we're going to be spending all day together in the house. That'll be interesting.
And the following weekend.
Here are my tips. And you actually just said the first one. So if you are in a long distance relationship, here's how you're going to make it work. I think the first thing is you have to like set expectations immediately. So you have to acknowledge that there is distance, and you have to acknowledge like how often you're going to see each other in this distance. So you have to set your expectations right away. So for instance, if you are doing something like New York, Chicago, or even New York, LA, you have to start talking immediately about how often are we going to see each other? How are we going to invest in this? And how are we going to talk? And I think that's something we did early on, where we established a kind of like a communication pattern. We didn't have to necessarily, I mean, God, in the beginning, you're excited. You want to talk to someone all the time, but we definitely communicate every single day, but it was not always through video. Like sometimes it would just be via text.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, so the first tip is like set your expectations, but the second thing is don't be excessive.
Yeah.
Like I didn't want to spend the entire day on FaceTime with you after a few weeks of knowing you, because then it's like with opportunity, you can misunderstand each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like if I spent too much time on the phone with you, and by too much time, I mean like over 30 minutes, like on FaceTime or whatever, and it was beyond like telling about how my day was or what happened today or whatever. Like what did I listen to, what newspaper article did I read or whatever, if it was in quiet time, there's just opportunities to be misunderstood, because you kind of get in this routine of like, do you miss me, did you think about me? It's like very childish. The third tip that I would give, which helped a lot, and you kind of referenced it before, is, you know, we did have fun the weekends, and that's because both of us would do our errands. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that word correctly. I know I always get it wrong, but errands. Whatever. We would do them when we're not together. So if I needed to do laundry, I made sure that laundry was done before you came down.
Mm-hmm.
The house was clean before you came down. Bills were paid before you came down. So that way I wasn't doing whatever I needed to do to maintain my life. Like, oh God, hair, nails, makeup, all that. I forget makeup. Makeup is every day, but hair and nails, that was never on a weekend for me. It was always, I have to get my hair cut or I have to get my nails done on a weekday, because the time that I have with my boyfriend is so limited. I can't let it be alone.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's definitely my third tip. Have you thought of any tips as I'm doing this?
Yeah, I think time management and planning things to do. That's very important, what you said. To have fun during the time that you are together, especially if this is a very Ours was a very unique. I think this kind of long-term New York-Boston is kind of in the middle of how far things are because it's accessible with car, train, and plane. Now, if you have something like New York-LA that you said before, for example, you have to go only by plane. You definitely have to make every second count that you're together. That's very important. And also, you know, having kind of, you said that, but also having your own social life outside the relationship. So you don't constantly think about your relationship thingy, when it's going to be together, where, you know, you find other ways to have fun as well. So you're as a individual, you're happy by yourself, and then you're even happier when you're with someone else who's also happy.
I think that was critical to our success, was that fact that you had your own set of friends in Boston that you did fun things with throughout the week. And I had my own set of friends and interests in New York that I was distracted by throughout the week. Mm-hmm. And I think that's such a great point. Like, you have to have a social life because you have to fill in the time that you're not with your partner throughout the week.
Yeah. Then it's very, you also, it's good to have, do things together. Like, one of the things that we're doing, we did several trips together, but eventually we kind of got into this like national park thing, buffs, and we'll go to national parks, try together, get the stamps. I remember when we've been to, and that's fun. It's, you know, it's, you spend this time a little bit more interestingly than just doing fun stuff in someone's city.
Right. Yeah. I had to really fight you to travel with me in the beginning.
Yeah. A little bit.
So George is from an island in Greece. And so whenever, before he met me, whenever he had time off, he would just fly back home to this Greek island, a very big Greek island, Crete. Look it up. It's a lot of fun. So when I met him, I was like, oh, we should go on vacation. He's like, oh, I've never done that. I'm like, what do you mean you've never done that? He's like, I've never been on vacation before. I go, what do you do on your days when you have like vacation time? And he goes, oh, I go back to see my parents on this Greek island. And I remember I had to get friends involved. I had to get Maria and Bono involved to like convince you to like take a 3-day weekend with me. And we settled on Memphis because we both like Elvis as like a palate hate, like, you know, like a small little taste of like, here's what it could be like if we go on vacation, and you loved it. And then after that, we started going to a ton of vacations.
Yeah. We did a lot of trips after that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, what would you say to someone? I'm wondering if I have any more tips. Take it one month at a time, I guess. I don't know. It's weird because like so much of me would say to myself, oh my God, you're about to embark in a, you know, nearly 6-year long distance relationship. Are you sure you want to do this? And obviously I'm in a happy marriage. I have these, you know, two beautiful children, and it was obviously worth it, but it was really hard. And I think even acknowledging that it's going to be hard is okay. Like, it can work out, but it's awful. It's hard.
Yeah. But, you know, I was reading, you know, that we say it doesn't matter the destination, it's the journey that counts. It's actually the company that does count for this.
Oh.
So that makes it even more interesting. And, you know, one last tip I have actually for this is kind of manage your expectations from the beginning and put them. If you are in, you know, if I was in Boston, I had a job that I loved, I didn't want to ever to leave, and you obviously are in New York and you never want to leave New York because your business is there, you have set up like a really good successful company there, then, you know, if you're in a situation like that, I think it's kind of like no point in pursuing a long distance relationship because it's going to be, you get fatigue at the end and a lot of constant fighting. In our case, as you said, you know, the plan was that eventually we'll get a job down here in New Jersey or New York and I'll come down. So that was actually a big driver for that. So if from the beginning, there are no expectations that you're actually going to move to each other's city. It's a non-starter, yeah. Or you can try it in the beginning and if things change, you know, you can't be certain from the beginning. But if like 1 year later, you see that there's no way I'm going to move down there for him or her, then there is no point in continuing something like that.
Right. I feel like I never said to you at any point, there's no way I'd move to Boston. I was open to it, but I think you liked my family, and
it's also honestly more opportunities for me down here than for you up in Boston. So I think that was easier too.
Right.
Plus, I said before, I wasn't too big fan of Boston anyway. Such a big fan of Boston anyway.
You know, I don't know if our Boston listeners are going to be upset with us or are mad or whatever, but I hope they're not. I hope they understand that, you know, we have a lot of love for Boston.
Yeah, it's a great city to visit, and I highly recommend people to visit Boston.
Great,
it's
like a historic city. Find a man too.
Yeah, maybe the circumstances were like this, that I didn't fall in love with Boston as a city.
What would you say to someone that is currently stuck? Like, I know right now I have some listeners that are in Canada, and they start talking, you know, they start talking to someone who's in New York or Chicago, but they can't leave, the borders are closed.
Mm-hmm.
Are there, yeah, or like people that are currently in Europe? Like, you know, we had a listener a few weeks ago ask about, you know, what she should be doing. You know, she might be doing long distance as well from Germany. And I guess I'm like wondering, like, you know, what tips would you give to someone when the pandemic forces you to be in a long distance relationship? Like, you can't just go see them right now.
Yeah, that's a tough one. But, you know, the pandemic would end eventually and we'll be able to travel again soon, hopefully. You know, if you can take the time and wait until then, but it would be good. You should stick to that. But again, from my own experience, if you don't have, you know, if you're in Canada and New York and there's no way the two people can eventually be together, you see that maybe through immigration issues or employment issues, then you should rethink your priorities.
Well, I think that this episode got into a lot more than long distance.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate you coming to, well, I appreciate you participating.
Yeah, thanks.
I also really, I think like thinking back to this, like now, because I don't, like you, I don't like to think about it. It was so awful. I only think about the good times, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if I would have had the same patience with other people. And I think that sometimes long distance can really clear up who you're supposed to talk to and who you're not. You know, it is stressful. It is hard. You are going to fight. There's no way around that because people fight because expectations were not met and you're frustrated. But if when you're together, you can just kind of let that stuff go and just enjoy each other at that moment, it just, there can be a really good payoff at the end. Again, like the beginning of the statement I just made, you're not meant to do this with everybody. So I don't want anyone forcing themselves in a long distance relationship for the sake of long distance. I think it really does take a person that has patience and who like you, like we've both said, like who you've both have talked about your expectations from each other. And that is an ongoing conversation. It's not just once, it's constant, especially in long distance.
Mm-hmm. It does take patience, and you know you have to make sure that the other person worth your patience and this, and you can, you knew a lot before you know, a lot sooner than I did, but you know, you always need a few months to explore things. But you know, if you're not sure after 6 months, that means probably you're not on the right track.
Yeah, that's true. What would you say to your, if you had an opportunity right now to go back in time and say, talk to George in 2012, what would you say to him? What would you warn your future self, past self about me?
About you. Okay. I wouldn't warn him about anything in particular. I would warn him about me, you know, that he should be able, don't drag it for too long. That's what I would tell him. This is great, just don't drag it for too long. But in the other respect, I might haven't said anything either because things worked out at the end. So, you know, a Marvel Universe reference now with the Infinity Stones, when you go back in the past and you change something, you create a whole new parallel universe. In that universe, maybe things won't work. So I would probably leave things untouched. But if I could warn, I would say, don't drag it for too long. Like, you know, once you get married, you should really be close to moving in together if you haven't already.
Mm-hmm.
It took us another year after that, 2 years actually, and a kid.
Yeah. I love you and I really like you and I'm really happy that you came on today.
Yeah, I love you too. That was a very good opportunity to talk about this because it's, and I, at some point while we were talking about this, I really felt like not ready to cry, but like, oh my God, we really went through this. That was really tough.
Yeah. I want to end this on a funny note. I'm going to talk about how we parted the first time and then how you, okay.
Goes back to you.
So yeah, it got back to me. All right. So Yorgo, George, and Maria take me to the station in Boston to take the Amtrak back to New York. This is 2 days after we've met. You know, we've made out at this point, so whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But Maria would not get the hint to like just like stay back, like so you could just walk me to the train and like kiss me one more time before I get on the train.
I mean, she did know that we went on a date. I'm not sure if she was like full into what happened and, you know, that we kind of like think of start dating.
So okay, that's whatever. Why she did not get the hint. I remember like, yo, stay back. Come on. She did not get that hint. And so now we're in front of the Amtrak train and I'm not going to, you know, she's my employee. She's yet to be, and I know she's one of your closest friends, but she's still my employee. I'm not trying to like kiss a guy, her friend in front of her. So I stick out my hand and I say harika, which is what you would say to someone in Greek, which means like, nice to meet you. Or you say it when you first meet someone, nice to meet you. Or after you've met someone, you say harika again, which means it was nice meeting you. Mm-hmm. So saying it is, it was nice meeting you. I stuck out my hand and we shook our hands. And I remember you looking at me like, really? Like, yeah, I think you were like playing along. But you were kind of like, really?
No,
like,
I wasn't expecting it, actually. So I was like, I'm like, oh, really? This is how we're going to end?
Okay, so that's how that ended. And then, you know, the rest is history. We got, you know, we were dating. We got engaged. It's the day of our wedding.
Almost 6 years later. No, 4 years later.
4 years later, right? Yeah. 3.5 years later. And in Greece, we got married in Greece. And in Greek weddings, the groom waits outside the church with all of the people that have come to your wedding, all of your guests, and they wait by the door, in front of the door with your bouquet. So like the bride comes up and then the groom gives the bouquet to the bride. They usually kiss or they hug or whatever. And then they walk into the church first and then the guests follow. So the custom is that the first people in the church at a Greek wedding should be the bride and groom, followed by all of their guests. And then everyone sits, right? So it's not like American weddings. Greek weddings are extremely mm-hmm. different. So I get to the church and you're up by the door holding my bouquet. And we had already talked about like, you know, we'll kiss. That's what people usually do. And I walk up the steps, you know, my dad walks me up. Both my parents were holding me. So they both take me up the steps and I go to kiss you. Mm-hmm. Like, whatever, like I was there for you to kiss me. And instead you take out your hand and you say, harika. And I was like,
oh. Yeah, don't forget.
You dick. That was really funny. I think those are the photos of me like laughing, like where I look like a weirdo, where like you're holding the bouquet and I'm kind of like laughing away. Like that was from when you did that. So I'll put that on my Instagram feed when this episode comes out so people can laugh about that. But yeah. Well, George, thank you for coming again. I think I've said thank you to you like 36 times now, but it was really great. And I really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you for listening to Ask a Matchmaker, a really personal week this week. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm so grateful to receive your questions and provide answers. And if you enjoyed today's episode and you want to listen to more episodes, you can follow Ask a Matchmaker podcast. You're also welcome to, you know, rate it, review it. If you have a dating or relationship question, you can visit askamatchmaker.com to submit your 60-second audio question or written question. You can also follow me on Instagram at matchmakermaria for more dating and relationship tips. Until then, be lovable and more importantly, be likable. See you next week.